Yeah, that's great.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening. The call to order for the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee meeting Tuesday, January 12th. And it is 5:36. My name is Herb Fredrickson. I'm the acting chair, and forgive me if I'm a little thoughtless on, because I'm not used to running meetings. So, and I've only been on the committee for, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, I think. So, that being said, we'll have roll call and introductions, and there's some new faces on our group. So why don't we start with Richard, and maybe you could just say a minute or two about yourself, why you are interested in being on the committee for new members.
I was thinking a little icebreaker, like what brought you to the committee?
Well,
since this is in person.
Actually, it's really nice seeing all the faces because we've had so many of these meetings just done on the Zoom for the past 2 years.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, my name's Richard Kegel. I'm retired now, and I live in, we stayed here in Newport. I've been an avid cyclist and runner, and because of ill health and aches and pains, I'm now an avid walker. I've been doing this about a year and a half, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
That's me. Anyway, I've been spending my day vaccinating people. I'm pooped.
And you're also on the Lincoln County.
Oh, yeah, I'm also with Lincoln County, but the Lincoln County has kind of disappeared. I can't rouse anybody.
The Lincoln County Bike and Ped Advisory Committee?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, so I've been doing that about 6 years.
Okay.
I've been with them.
So COVID just kind of, they stopped having meetings?
I haven't heard a word one since we first went into lockdown. I haven't heard from them at all.
Okay. Yeah. All righty.
My name is Herb Fredrickson. I think I joined the committee, end of last summer. I'm a civil engineer, retired. I lived in Napa, California before that. I was basically a project manager, worked on a lot of bike projects and other Caltrans projects. I've been a bike commuter since the mid-80s. And since moving here in May, I wanted to try and get involved with the city of Newport, see if my experience would help in any way.
Did you put it on at the bottom?
One of these mics is, try that.
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
Okay. Hello, my name is Araceli Guevara. I'm a resident of Newport. I do social work. I'm currently working. I would love to use my bicycle, but honestly, I'm afraid to, and I would like to see Newport roads be more friendly towards bicycles. I mean, I would love to ride a bike, but honestly, I am terrified. And that's what I'm here. Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Ryan. I'm the council liaison. That's what brought me here. I spent some quality time at City Hall.
I'm Beth Young. I'm the staff liaison. I love bicycling. If I weren't the staff liaison, I would probably be asked to be on this committee because I think it's great for a town to have a real strong bike and pedestrian structure so that everybody can ride, all kinds of riders.
Hi, I am Minda Stiles. I've lived in Newport since 2012, and I came from Portland where I worked in affordable housing, and we were really aware of public transportation access and pedestrian safety around the developments. And so when I moved here, I had that lens and was interested in becoming part of this committee so that I could help improve specifically pedestrian safety around town. And I'm in my third year of this committee.
I'm Thomas Follett. I've been a member for 2.5 years. I mean, I think I'm getting close to
the end of it. You're the longest.
I've been in Newport for 25 years. I came from Seattle. I was a bike messenger for a long time and commuted everywhere and had big plans to ride my bike here for about the first couple months. And now I only ride away from town. I'm really interested in finding the bottlenecks to making improvements to our transportation system and helping to shepherd some of these projects through and get some safe places for people to walk and bike in Newport.
Buddy?
Yes, thank you, everyone. Our next item is approval of the January 8th meeting minutes. We did not have a meeting in March. So does anybody have any comments on the minutes or?
Technically, it's February 8th.
Oh, did I say February something else?
You said January. It's okay.
Did the agenda and minutes get emailed out? Because I actually can't find them in my email.
I didn't get one.
I've got some hard copy.
Well, they are here. Do you want to have time to look them over and?
Stay on the table?
Oh, you got one on your, everybody got one?
There.
Did I take yours? I may have taken yours.
Oh, okay. Do you want this back? Is there another one there?
That's an extra.
Okay.
So if you guys want time to read through it, we can approve it next time.
Oh, February's. Does anybody? Yeah, let's just do that. We'll motion to approve February 8th in our next meeting. And Beth, could you email us all this packet so we just have it?
Yeah,
at home?
Of course.
Okay, thanks.
But you already have it. I mean, who's here?
I like electronic copies, okay. So I can just keep it in my folder at home. So. Item D is active transportation incident report. We don't have any incidents for February or March, so we'll move on. Public comment, I don't see any outside public, but we have some guests. Is this the time for guests to speak?
Peggy and David are here to present.
Okay. And which item are they on?
It's coming up, isn't it? Yeah, F.
Okay.
Well, it looks like we have a letter from Wendy. Did she request it be read?
She did not request it to be read.
So just acknowledge that it's in the packet.
Yes.
Okay, acknowledged. It is in the packet. I did read her letter at home, if anyone else had the opportunity. Item F, advisory committee orientation presentation. So the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for allowing us to be here tonight. You have not been singled out. We are taking this committee orientation to all of the city standing committees. You are actually the second committee we've attended today.
Second today, yeah.
Yeah, and we've already done two or three, I don't know. But anyway, so we're just going to quickly, because I know some of you have heard this before, but some of you maybe have not. So we'll quickly go through it. Today we're going to talk about how this committee was created, the duties of the committee, and you're going to see a huge typo on the next slide because I cut and pasted from the airport. So my apologies. Public meetings, public records, and ethics. And David is just going to see where I said duties of the airport committee. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. So thankfully, I have the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee duties, and these are actually from the Newport Municipal Code because this committee was created by ordinance, and these are your responsibilities. I know you all have this in your packet, so I'm not going to read through it, but if you have any questions after you take a look at it, or if you've taken a look at it right now and have questions, let us know.
It's also in your handbook.
So I think of all the committees, this committee has more defined duties in the municipal code than any other committee, any other standing committee.
I think it does.
Yeah, it really does. So the next section that we're going to cover is public meetings. And the types of meetings that you might have would be your regular meetings, which are your regular monthly meetings. And then it is possible, not very likely, that you may have, you know, break down into smaller groups, for example, to work on a particular item. Do you want to say anything about that? I know.
No, all I would say is, since there's seven members on the committee, as you've probably heard many times, four is a quorum, a majority, and you always want to make sure that if you're outside a meeting, not to have four, and even not to have three. Perhaps you can, you know, speak with another committee member just generally, but, you know, even we like to refrain from that and just really have our committee topics discussed at the time of the public meeting. But if, you know, if you do get to the point where there's four people in the room from the committee, then you really need to be careful about dispersing. And even for appearance purposes, you know, sometimes people wonder, you know, you got a group there and it's not been noticed. So just always be cognizant of that. I think for your committee, it's probably not quite the issue as perhaps other committees. But in any event, that's just something to be aware of. And I'm sure you've heard that before. As far as subcommittees, you're probably not going to have subcommittees. But if you, as if the entire group, want to actually have a smaller group, even three of your committee members focus on an issue and recommend something up to the entire committee, by doing that, you're actually creating another committee or subcommittee that's subject to the public meeting law, even if it's less than a quorum. So let's say three of you decided at the request of the full committee to meet to talk about a specific project or issue and recommend something up to the committee, then that you want to make sure that Beth's aware of that, and she would be, and then she would let us know, because then we have actually have to start noticing those meetings. But that probably won't happen. But if it does, just be aware that's something that has to be complied with.
What those subcommittee meetings, do they need to keep minutes? Do they
like any committee?
Okay.
Yep. It's another committee within a committee.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question about work groups too.
Like, work groups are the same. If people are meeting as a work group and they're actually meeting to recommend something up to the entire committee, that's needs to be formally recognized and needs to be noticed as a public meeting when the subgroup or working group meets. It doesn't matter what you call it, a working group or subcommittee. The point is, if there's a group of people meeting that are smaller than the larger committee and they're actually developing policy for the full committee to consider, then you have to notice it.
What I mean is, like when no decisions are actually being
made. Doesn't matter.
Made.
Deliberating is the same as making a decision as far as.
Okay, and it's everybody.
It's deliberating is just as recognized as being subject to the public meetings law as any decision that arises out of it. If I'm getting into nuance, but if a small group was put together just to gather information, and that's all they did was gather information without even discussing it. And then that could be an exemption. But again, you got to be careful, because when you start talking about how you want to consider the information at the full committee level or recommend something, then you're actually getting into what's required as a noticed public meeting, even if for a small group.
Okay. So even if you don't actually have a motion, you don't vote on things.
Just deliberating.
You still need to have notice. It needs to have notice and an agenda and minutes.
If the full group decided to say, you three committee members, you meet as a working group, you compile information, you talk about it, you come back to us with a recommendation, that needs to be noticed as a public meeting.
Can I just ask for clarification? If a couple of us bump into each other on the street and discuss issues,
if you meet someone on the committee and you talk about issues, that's fine. But you know, it's always good just to recognize that if there's something you talked about that's really of substance or importance, make sure you bring it up at the committee meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay. But meeting someone at the store or on the street, that's fine. If you get into three of you are talking, even though it's less than a quorum, it's probably good just to keep it to maybe just another committee member, if you actually, you know, meet someone or pick up the phone. Sometimes you can pick up the phone and ask a committee member, hey, what happened at the meeting? Or, you know, I mean, if generic stuff. But if you're talking about policy or how you want to consider an issue, even with one other person on the committee, it's always good just to save that to have a full deliberation with the entire group.
Okay, so I'm going to pursue this a little more. What if you just talk about general things or not even bicycle things?
That's fine.
You can.
Fine.
If you're having a social.
Social.
If you talk about bicycling in Newport in general?
You know, if it's a general topic, that's not actually going to be before the committee. But if you're talking about bicycling in Newport, you have to ask yourself, maybe that someday will be before the committee as an item to consider. But if it's just general issues, again, if you're talking with someone else, you can even talk about committee business with someone else, as long as you're just keeping it to two people, though you want to kind of bring it up at the committee. But again, keep it, you know, this is what how the council likes to operate as well. I mean, council members talk with each other between meetings, but they always know, keep it to maybe just one other person. Don't go to three or four. And I served on the council, as you know, for 13 years prior to this. And that was just one of my kind of rules, was just to keep it to one other person if I even wanted to talk about another issue.
It can be up to three, though.
Well, it can be, but again, probably don't put it to three. And again, it's for appearance purposes, but I would say just one other person if that. Three is not against the public meetings law, but again, it could turn into a serial meeting, which gets into another issue, which means if you are talking to someone or two other people, and then that person talks to someone else on the committee, it doesn't matter whether you're all in the same room at the same time or whether you're even in the same space at the same time. The fact is, if a quorum of committee members, meaning four or more, actually know what the three others talked about, even if they didn't meet together, the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court have recognized that as a serial meeting, which can be just as much of a violation of the public meetings law as if all four people were in the same room at the same time. So that's why you want to keep your conversations to a minimum, because you never know when you talk to someone about making a decision, someone else tells someone else on the committee, before you know it, everyone on the committee knows what everyone else is going to do.
Yeah, I didn't know about serial meetings.
Well, that's an important
really interesting
issue.
Yeah. Well,
from my experience as a mostly lifelong Oregonian, the public meetings law in Oregon is much more strict than other states. And the public expectation of that law, as the framework committee that created it, were thinking that we're trying to avoid presupposition of voting agreements, majority consensus building outside of a public meeting, because the public expects of that debate, although it's not glitzy or glamorous, needs to occur in a public meeting so that comments can be recorded into the record. And I think that is the main, from my perspective, that's the main reason why we have that rule, because it's easy and emotionally, it's sometimes, there would be a tendency for people to do the presupposition stuff, and that was the way the old boy network worked before. So in the interest of transparency and the interest of public trust, I think we just need to follow the ORS. And but yeah, I bump into other council members all the time at the store, and it's 99.9% social. Mm-hmm. Neither of us gives it a shrug. It's just kind of life in a small town, so.
The safest choice is wait until the committee meeting to discuss committee business. But if you actually happen to do it with one other committee member, it's not going to be violating the public meetings law, but it could actually lead to that if you're not careful with the serial meeting issue.
Okay, thank you. That's informative. There's a bit of a mystery about it, so that helped. Thanks.
Good questions. Thanks for asking, because that's a really important issue. I'm glad you guys delved into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
So the city's general public meeting policy is that notice is required, and our notice here is typically the agenda. And so our agenda is, once they are published, go out to the news media. We have a media list, and they also are posted in three places around the community, which I think is some sort of archaic thing that we just continue to do, maybe. And they are then posted also on our website. Your meetings have to be held in an appropriate space and location. And one of the things that we found since COVID was people in the community like watching these meetings. So you are right now being broadcast on Charter Channel 190. Okay, thank you, David. and then also on the city's live stream. And the city's live stream is, after this meeting, it's posted on the city website. So if you want to go back and look at a meeting, this meeting or any other meeting, because we do this with all of our meetings, you can go onto the city's website and look at it. Or if, for example, you don't have charter but you wanted to watch a meeting, you could go onto the city's website. And once the meeting actually starts, you can just watch the live stream. So that's the reason that we have to have our meetings in this room, is because this is our only facility where we can do the live streaming and the broadcasting on Charter Channel 190. So it was the decision recently that all of our meetings would be held here. It's sort of it's sort of disappointing after having, you know, we lived a different life. We met in conference room A and we still recorded everything. But I think it just didn't get the attention that perhaps our meetings are getting now. And so this is the way we have to do it for a while.
We don't have to sit at the Diaz, though.
The goal is, yes. And the reason, and there's a really good reason for that. The reason for that is because it's so much easier to be heard when you're using that microphone system. And also there's a person in this audio-visual room who is focusing on each of the speakers, and that's very difficult out here.
Okay, makes sense.
You know, when you wouldn't do it is if you had like a joint meeting with another committee and there were too many of you to sit up there, then you could sit out here. But we are trying to avoid sitting out here because of the videography component and also the audio piece. In addition to there being a video of this meeting, we also have backup audio, hopefully, that we just keep in case something goes haywire with the video. Anyway, all of our meetings require an agenda, and agendas have to contain sufficient information so that the public knows what you're going to be talking about. And each agenda item hopefully has attached to it supporting documentation. The city went to an electronic agenda management system about 5 or 6 years ago. And so if you don't get an email, you can always go on the city website, because Beth has posted it on the city website once she publishes the agenda. And you can pull it up and you can click on the blue links and see all of the supporting documentation. It's all going to be there. So things have changed quite a bit, because back in the old days, we had committee meetings that actually the agendas looked like old business, new business, and nobody had a clue what anyone was going to be talking about, because that's all it said. So we are required to make it, to have the agenda contain enough information so you know, the people on the street know what you're going to be talking about at any meeting.
And that has to be published how many
hours? Well, we try to get it out 3 days in advance. That's, you know, that's not the law, but that's our process. So if if something happens and you can't get it out 3 days, just try to get it out 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up on that. And I mentioned this at the committee meeting earlier today as well. So when the agenda is set and it's posted or published 3 days in advance of the meeting, that's not only to let you as committee members know what the issues are, but also the general public. So the goal is to make sure that every item you want to discuss or take action on is part of that posted agenda item. Now, sometimes things come up between, you know, the posting and the meeting 3 or 4 days. You know, this happens at the council meetings periodically, where staff wants to bring an issue to someone's attention or the group's attention, and they weren't aware of it until, you know, that day or the day before. In that case, you can add an item to the agenda, but you should do it in just very, you know, make that the exception rather than the rule. And what you would do is at the beginning of the meeting, the chair would basically ask staff if there's any other items to add to the agenda that they weren't aware of prior to posting. And then staff would mention what the issue is, and the group can decide whether they want to add it to the agenda. Now, the council, under the council rules, basically says 75% of the council members have to vote to add it to the agenda before they even just consider it. So I would just say a majority, you know, if a majority of your group wants to put it on the agenda, that's probably sufficient, and then you can discuss it at that point. And hopefully staff would have the supporting documentation along with that agenda item, so at least a group, if there was information, would have that in front of them. And then after the meeting, staff would then make sure that's published or posted so the general public could actually see that information as well as if it had actually been published when the original agenda was posted 3 days prior to the meeting. The other issue that I want to bring up, and this happens periodically, is during committee comments or committee member comments. Typically, most committees have a general discussion amongst committee members. Now, I'm not saying this committee does it, but in other committees, I've seen where there's a discussion, all of a sudden there's an item being discussed, and then there's a motion and a vote taken. And it wasn't even an agenda item added to the agenda at the beginning of the meeting. It was just key, it just arose out of that discussion. That really shouldn't be done. I mean, really, that's not giving anyone notice, including the committee members and the staff, advance notice as to, you know, what is this issue? Do we have enough documentation to make an informed decision on it? So in that case, when you have a committee comment discussion at the end of the meeting and there's an issue of importance, the council does this quite often, is you just basically say, okay, we want to talk about this. We'll wait till next meeting. We'll have staff look into it. We'll get the supporting documentation, and we'll actually put it on the agenda as a formal agenda item rather than trying to make a decision and take a vote tonight without all the information in front of us. So I would suggest that if that issue comes up, just move it to the next meeting. Now, I know you only meet once a month. The council meets twice a month as well as the Planning Commission. But again, you know, it's better to wait, especially if it's not an emergency, so you can make a better informed decision and have it actually on the agenda as an item for not only you but the general public to look at and consider as well.
Okay, so just for our housekeeping, it might be good, say, if the chair emailed people on the committee and said, we're going to meet in a week. Do you have anything you want to add to the agenda?
Staff has time to put it together? I would leave that to the staff. We don't like committee members sending. It's probably best for Beth to do that. So I think what Beth would want to do is prior to posting the agenda on, I don't know what day you posted, Beth, probably on Thursday, typically, probably that Monday or even the Friday before, ask any committee members, is there anything you want to put on the agenda? And if it's something that can be on the agenda as a discussion or action item, that at least gives staff a few days to get any supporting documentation on the agenda. If there is no supporting documentation, then you have a discussion. And if there needs to be further discussion, you move it to the next meeting, and then you keep on talking about it until perhaps something is resolved or decided upon. But that gives staff advance notice. So, yes, I would probably say for you as committee members, make sure Beth gets it at least whatever works for her, 4 days, 5 days before posting the agenda. Now, Beth, between posting the agenda and actually the meeting, something might come up that she's aware of that she wants to bring to the committee's attention. That's when she would ask you at the committee at the beginning of the meeting, I'd like to add something to the agenda. Is it okay to do that? But that's really something that staff should be doing, not the committee members. You should give Beth advance notice prior to the posting of the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
And just in general, you can always just say you want something to be on the agenda next time, anytime. And my drop-dead deadline is 5:30 on Friday night. I always shoot for Tuesday of that week. But it never happens. So a good week is Thursday.
Okay.
So just let me know.
About emailing and serial emails.
Yeah, well, okay, Becky just asked me about emails and serial emails. So the other thing that the council is very cognizant of, because they go through not just training, but there's a lot of presentations that are given to the council and the Planning Commission as well, is emails and serial emails and having a meeting by email. So really what you need to be careful of is emails to the entire group can't turn into actual meeting, because if someone replies all and then sends it to the entire group, and then you basically are having an email discussion without anyone knowing about it and actually deliberating on an issue, that actually is something that's come up before the appellate courts. You want to refrain from doing that. So if you really have an issue that's burning and you want to actually send it out to the entire group, probably best, at least at your level, to send it to Beth, have her send it out, because she's not subject to the same requirements you are as a committee member. She can actually send it out to the entire group. And what I would recommend is if Beth sends it out to the entire group, that if there's any response that someone would like to let the other group know of, at least just send it directly to Beth. Don't hit reply all. you should probably direct everything to Beth, especially if it's regarding an issue that could come before the committee as something that you will be deliberating on. So always make sure with emails, it probably gets channeled through Beth, and she can kind of control who sees it, or I should say how many people get it, and kind of probably keep to a minimum any potential of people hitting reply all and having a serial meeting by email.
There was, what we do is anybody can send an email to the group, but nobody is allowed to reply or reply all, because then it becomes a discussion.
I would probably say yes to a point. You don't want to send an entire email out to the entire group and say, this is what I think I'm going to do at the next meeting.
No.
Yeah, what you want to do. No, let me.
Usually just a link or a grant program, a new grant program.
Exactly. Let's just clarify.
Look what this city's done.
Informational items are fine. As long as you're sending a link or just something as an FYI, you can send that to the entire group. You just don't want the entire group replying back to it. But that's perfectly acceptable. The council does that, and other committees do that. But again, this is training, and I'm just trying to make the point as clear as possible to keep people from violating the public meetings law. Always good to refrain from saying what it is you think about something or what you think you're going to decide upon, just for the potential of it turning into a serial meeting or a deliberation by email.
We have had a situation where we're trying to come up with our priority projects, for example, and at one point a couple years ago, someone created a Google Doc, and we had this thought, oh, we could all go into the Google Doc and like list our ideas for projects. It never really took off, but I think I'm not clear on if that would be permitted, because there's a lot of extra work to do in this committee that is hard to get done during our meetings. And so it would be nice if we could have a way to sort of workshop things outside of the meetings like that.
Probably not a good idea. I would say that for setting priorities, which is something you would deliberate and recommend up to the council or as part of your internal policies, the best thing to do, and this is what happens at the council level, is you send your ideas to staff, they compile it, and then you have a list of the ideas to consider at the next meeting. Google Docs runs into the potential of people seeing what other people are thinking, respond. I mean, it can turn into actually a potential serial meeting or just a quorum kind of deciding something outside the scope of a public meeting. So really, if you're setting priorities, send them to Beth. She puts them together, and then you have an agenda item at the next meeting, setting priorities with the list, and then you discuss and deliberate it then. And if you need to revise it, you wait till the next meeting to revise it based on the discussion at that meeting.
Thank you.
So the next item that we'll be talking about is public attendance. In the Oregon public meeting law is a public attendance law, not a public participation law. I don't know if you typically have people in your audience who want to make comments, but they have no inherent right to provide testimony or comment. But as a practice here at the city, we include on all of our agendas a public comment section so that if somebody comes, you may allow them to speak if it's appropriate, and you can also set the time limit as a committee. If you had maybe 25 people in here, you might say we're gonna do 2 minutes for each person. That's entirely up to the chair. David?
Can I ask a clarifying question? When we were on Zoom, I thought that we had a requirement for people to notify Beth like 2 hours in advance before they could join the meeting to provide comment.
Oh, the public?
The public.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right.
But with the public comment period, people could just show up and make comments.
Yes, yes. And the reason we had to do that was because we had to make sure that they had the Zoom link, because okay. We weren't publishing the Zoom link. And so when somebody wanted to make comment, we had to know far enough in advance to have time to send that to them.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So the next piece is on control of meetings. The chair is in charge. And so that authority extends over the audience. I don't see that ever becoming a problem here. Like, we had our very first in-person city council meeting last week, and we probably had 50 people in the audience. Yes. That was a different story.
It was.
But anyway, the chair does have the authority. So voting at meetings. is something that I know is difficult for people in certain situations. Official votes must be taken in public and recorded in the minutes. Now, what we've seen in the past, not necessarily with this committee, I don't think, but with some committees, is if you are interviewing people for a position on the committee and you have multiple applicants, it's really tough to be sitting there and saying, okay, I choose you as opposed to you, but you have to do it. Now, you can do it on a piece of paper. You can say, you can have a written ballot for the committee if they're faced with a situation like that, and that every single committee person can check the box of the person that they would like to have, you know, recommend to the mayor, but they have to sign that. And then the staff person has to read those into the records. For example, Ryan Parker selected candidate A. And I mean, they have to be read out loud. So there's no secret. And one of the things that I found over the years is it is hard for committees, but it's the same thing. You're going to hear it one way or another. So,
along with that is we're not choosing people.
No, you're choosing to recommend people.
Choosing to recommend. Uh-huh. So even though we're not making the decision, what we've been doing, and maybe this is wrong, but when we have two people coming to a meeting. Usually there are two or three openings, so it's not a big deal. Luckily, we haven't had to choose people among people. But we have them, one speak, and then while the other's not in the room, and then the other speak when the other's not in the room, and then they both leave. And they usually leave the meeting. They're welcome to come back. And we talk among ourselves. We don't do a formal vote. It's usually unanimous. It's always unanimous.
There needs to be some method of formally recommending that the mayor appoint those people. And so that typically be by...
I think we do a motion for recommendation, that sort of thing.
That's perfect.
Oh, having to decide whether someone will be a member or an alternate. Choosing people.
That's right. We will say, that we choose to...
And I think we can give, when I joined the committee, I think it was before you were here, the committee gave me and the other person an option to leave the room if we felt awkward about it, but we could stay if we wanted to. And I think at least for that discussion, that was a good way to approach it, that we weren't required to leave.
That's right. You're not required to leave because you are a member of the public and public can attend these meetings. And I've seen it happen in various ways where sometimes the applicants feel more comfortable waiting in the hallway or they just leave. But anyway, there does need to be, I guess, a motion to recommend that the mayor appoint. And then
that's what we do.
Okay, good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, very good.
That's good.
So the next piece is be informed. Beth sends the packet and she spends a lot of time getting it together. She has prepared the agenda and all the supporting documentation, and we urge you to read that in advance. All those meeting materials are posted on the city website, and you can go on to the committee, any committee, and look at their current agenda, and then if you hit the blue link, then you'll be instantly transported to that supporting documentation. So then finally, before we get the public records, we're going to talk about minutes. And sadly, we used to have a contractor who prepared minutes, and he got a real job. And we are all suffering right now from that. I just did 20 pages of minutes for the council meeting, Monday's council meeting.
One meeting?
Yes, one meeting. It was a big meeting. So anyway... Maybe someday we'll have somebody to take that responsibility on again. But the minutes don't have to be, you know, heavy duty. They just have to include who was present. Any motion or measure or proposal or anything that you make a decision on has to be there and the result of that. The results of the vote, so for example, if three of you voted yes and two of you voted no, that would be in there. what I would typically do is I'll say, you know, if it's a split vote, I will put the names of the members who are voting each way, just because it, people want to know that. Also, right now, this city does sort of a hybrid minutes format where there's a little bit of supporting information, but not a lot. My sense is that things could change a lot because the person who's replacing me right now, I know that he does action minutes. So maybe that's in the cards for all of our committees. I'm not sure. We'll see.
He doesn't what minutes? He doesn't do minutes?
He does minutes, but they're action minutes. So action minutes are really condensed minutes, and all they have is like the agenda title and the motion maker, the motion second, the motion, and the vote. Pretty much that's it.
Not the discussion.
Mm-mm. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons that, I'll let you talk in a second.
So under state law, there are certain requirements that have to be in minutes. I think what Peggy's saying is the action minutes are really just the bare minimum of what's required under law.
Okay.
A lot of times we add discussion, which isn't required, but it's always good. In my view, it's good to have at least some discussion in the minutes because you want to know what people were thinking or discussing before they took the vote. With the action minutes, you actually have to either go to the audio file or video file to actually listen, to actually fill in the picture, but that might be the way things happen depending on, as Peggy said, how her replacement handles putting together the minutes.
You know, also, one of the reasons that we've utilized this sort of hybrid method of minutes is because when you're looking at those papers, and we are required to keep paper minutes forever, and so if you're like 100 years from now looking at minutes and you're looking at action minutes, you can be just about sure that you're not going to be listening to an audio file and potentially a video file. So
yeah, well,
it's good to have just a little bit of background in there, which is the reason that we've done it. But anyway,
I'm not thinking 100 years ahead.
Well, you have to.
I know.
So next,
can I ask how are our minutes prepared now?
Peggy.
Well, who's going to do now? The guy just quit. Who did the February and then he quit? So
the staff people have to do the minutes. Like I staff the city council meetings, so I am responsible, sadly, for the 20-page set of minutes that I just finished today. And I also staff a number of other committees, and I'm going to have to do those until. You know, what could happen is right now we're advertising for a deputy city recorder. And so if we get that person, if we fill that position was the position that prepared a lot of the minutes in the past. So hopefully we'll fill that. And then we'll be, you know, breathing again.
Okay.
So our next section is going to be public records.
I have a question. You might be getting to this, but you talked about including in the minutes what motions were made and votes taken. How do we know when a vote actually needs to be taken? And I've been on other boards and committees where things like approving the minutes isn't really, you don't really need a motion for that. So how do we know when we need a motion?
So you know, the practice in the city has been to use a motion and a second to approve the minutes. I know that in some groups that's just not done. If nobody has any problems with it, it's just deemed to be approved, but we don't do that. We do require a motion and a second. And anytime there's a motion, there's gonna need to be a vote.
Well, a second first.
Well, but I guess, asking, well, what's a motion and when do you need a motion?
I think it's when we wanna make a decision. Like today we might want to decide that we do want to have a joint meeting with Parks and Rec, and we might even decide on which month we want to. It's whenever we want to make a decision as a group, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I think that's a good way to portray it. Okay. You know, that just reminded me of something that I need to say before I forget it. But if there's anybody on this committee, any committee member who would like to participate on the Vision 2040 committee, representing this committee, let me know that, because we have some standing committee vacancies. So,
and yeah, that's great. You can be on more than one committee.
Yes.
RSLE's on two right now.
She policy is.
In relation to directing staff time, I think that's important where you want to do a motion, and you've maybe discussed an agenda item at the meeting, and you're confirming consensus before you move on to the next step of either revisiting that item in another meeting or requesting staff do something or making a recommendation to the council. I think those are the things that it's better to have it in the record that the motion was fielded, seconded, comments were added or not, and then passed.
So if there's something we're discussing and we either ask or Beth offers to research it for us, we have to have a motion to do that because we're directing
no,
the time?
No, but oh. if you're trying to agree as a committee on something to send up to us, then I recommend you do it by motion.
Yeah. Oh, to send to the council.
Beth write
yeah.
a letter to the council saying these feelings that you guys have.
Yeah.
Something like that. Or have Michael write a letter.
Right. Okay. As we know, staff are fielding multiple tasks throughout their day, and so the more clear their request is from a committee, the better it is to make sure that, one, that request is honored by the committee and it reaches the ears of the individual it was deemed as a committee as a whole. The majority of that committee wants to see something pursued. Having that motion approved and pass is kind of a gatekeeping device, in my opinion.
It is a gatekeeping device, and also as a staff person, you know, there's a month between many of the meetings that I staff, and I need to go back there and see what is my, you know, what have I been directed to do, and what is my follow-up that I need to have ready for the next meeting. And so if that's there, then it's a good help for the staff. So, anybody else? Because now we'll launch into public records, and we are on slide 18, so we only have 7 left.
I'm really good at interrupting. I got to peel away and do something in conference room A at 6:30. I double booked myself, unfortunately. Was there anything that you wanted me to address to the council or about the committee that you wanted to remind me about so I wouldn't forget, or because I'm not sure when I'll bounce back into the meeting depending on this other call. So
it'd be up to an hour.
Nothing that I can think of.
Okay.
And I guess if we
one of my goals in attending in person is make sure that I'm available if people want to sidebar. In most cases I come just for this meeting, but this is weird times. I ended up getting double booked for something, so
okay.
You can always email me if you do have concerns or questions, yeah. Or call me or whatever. The door is open for sure.
Thank you, Brian. So, what is a public record? A public record is any information, regardless of its physical form or characteristics, that pertains to the public's business. And so I'm going to show you a slide with a number of things that are considered to be public records because they relate to public business. It's this one. So it could be something handwritten, recorded, files, audio and video files, text messages, Zoom chats. And so I have to tell you that when we were totally on Zoom, I was always fearful that somebody was going to launch into something in the chat. And it took me forever to figure out how to stop the chat. But if there was something like that happening, that is a public record that somebody could request. I want to see your chat records for whatever meeting. So anyway.
It's a little bit of a disconnect because a lot of the great nonprofits in the county that do Zoom meetings for their annual meeting or monthly meeting or whatever it is, they really make great use of the chat. But in a governing body sense or a advisory committee sense here, that kind of flips it on its head and creates a second stream of consciousness that isn't necessarily related to an agenda item, and therefore we have quashed the chat function in our meetings anyway.
Right.
It just keeps it a little cleaner, but the chat is extremely valuable if you look at it from the community group and nonprofit sector, for sure.
Oh, for sure. And then, you know, during the height of COVID, I scheduled training sessions for a number of my colleagues, and the chat was invaluable because, you know, we could ask questions of the presenter in the chat, and then that person was just, you know, instead of having to call on people all the time, just able
to... You could email out questions that weren't addressed in the Q&A to everybody that attended. That's kind of a cool feature that Zoom has.
So, in Newport, we have a public records request policy, and basically what that means is that, you know, people can ask to see whatever public record that the city might have. As long as it's disclosable, we are going to do our very best to provide that. There's a form that needs to be filled out, and there are three levels of public records requests. Level one is very, very basic, and somebody could just, for example, this happens all the time with insurance companies. They send the police department $15 and a request for a police report, for example, from an accident. That's a level one. I don't want to see those. Or if somebody wants a list of all the business licensees in the city, they can go to the finance department. We don't have to see those. But level two and level three are more in-depth requests that usually take some staff time. And what we do is, if it's going to cost more than $20 to produce that, and we actually base the cost on actual staff time and number of copies and that sort of thing, then we require a deposit. So a deposit of what we think it will cost. If it costs less than that, we refund people. If it costs more, we invoice them. But you wouldn't believe the number of public records requests we get and what they're for. So the last thing we're going to talk about today is ethics, and this is David's favorite topic. So take it away, David.
Well, I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but I'm not sure, did the committee get a copy of the most recent guide for public officials from the Oregon Government and Ethics Commission?
I don't recall it.
Our little packet, we have council
maybe not.
Rules.
I know that it was sent out to the airport committee, so they were able to kind of read along with
this
me.
This is what it looks like, Beth. And if you don't have it, let me know. Are you going to send it to her?
If you got it, why don't you send your own?
A key on the closet. I'll go get it.
So
David's going to talk about it.
Yeah. So Beth, I'll send you a link, and you can forward it on to the committee. This is a guide. So the Oregon Government Ethics Commission is the state agency that governs the state ethics laws for public officials. And you're a public official, even though you're a volunteer and you're working at a committee level. Volunteers are public officials as much as even paid appointed officials or council members or planning commission. That's you're categorized as a public official, so you have to meet the ethics laws that pertain to public officials as much as anyone else. And this guide is invaluable because it really goes through in a very readable format what the different ethics laws are and what you're required to do or what you're supposed not to do. I would say that the two issues that might come up at your committee level, if at all, would be conflicts of interest. And that is basically when you're deciding or deliberating on an issue. And in deliberating or potentially making a decision on that issue, it could either be to your financial or it could be to your financial detriment or benefit or relatives of yours or businesses you're associated with. And the list of what's a relative is very comprehensive, and it's actually set by state statute. And I won't go into it. You can read, you know, what the different relatives are that would be subject to the same requirements that you are when you're making a decision when we send the guide out. But for instance, I'll give you a hypothetical just maybe for your committee. Let's say that there's an item on the agenda relating to a new bike path. And you're not going to make a final decision on it, but you're going to be recommending that to the council. And that's critical for a couple things, and I'll get into that. So let's say that as a group, you deliberate and you vote to recommend moving forward with constructing that bike path. Let's say someone on the committee either was a consultant or worked for a company that was a consultant that helped design bike paths here in the community. And perhaps they might be a potential person or company that could, you know, benefit from that bike path if they were, through a public proposal, RFP, were selected to do the work. So that would be a potential conflict of interest, because you at the committee, at this committee level, are not making a final decision. That would have to go up to the council, potentially, or our city manager to make that final decision. So it's not a actual conflict of interest, meaning if you take a vote, by voting a certain way, if your company was to benefit, clearly was to benefit from it, that would be an actual conflict of interest. You would have to declare that at the time of the discussion, recuse yourself and not participate or vote on that item whatsoever. But the fact that you're only recommending a decision to a higher body, so to speak, the council, to make a final decision, yours is only a potential conflict of interest, meaning by taking a vote, it could lead to a financial benefit or detriment. It may not, but it could, because you may work for a company that could benefit from it, or you yourself might benefit from it financially by being a consultant. In that case, what you need to do is declare that you have a potential conflict of interest before you start deliberating or voting on that agenda item, and the reason why. And in doing that, you can continue to deliberate and vote, because it's only a potential conflict of interest. But declaring it at the beginning or at the outset of that agenda item is what's critical, and then you're free to do what any other committee member would do and, again, deliberate and vote. It's only the actual conflict of interest that requires you to step down and not participate whatsoever, but that won't come up at your committee level. It comes up at the council meetings, and sometimes it comes up at planning commission meetings, because sometimes they do make final decisions. So that's kind of the one thing that I would say, when you get the guide from Beth, or when I send it to Beth, or Peggy sends it to Beth, read through that section. And the other thing I would suggest is, if you ever have a question about ethics laws, call the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. They have staff that's there to help public officials work through issues before the public official is faced with having to make a decision. So I always say, call them before you make the decision, not afterwards, because they may help you, but they're a little more boxed in because you've already kind of done what they may advise you not to do. So always call them and be proactive if you feel there's a question, and their staff are ready and available to help public officials. That's what they're paid to do. And in fact, cities around the state of Oregon help pay for the agency staffing at that particular agency, because they know how important it is for public officials to get good advice before any final or any decision is made by that public official.
Okay, so I understand the difference between potential and real, but does it have to be monetary gain? Here's an example. I want to use this example because we recently decided, we were given the decision of how to spend $60,000. And we had to decide on which of the many bike paths and stuff on the TSP we would recommend. We ended up recommending 11th Street. Say I lived on 11th Street, or say somebody else lived on 11th Street, they could still be part of the discussion, right? Even it's not monetary benefit.
Yeah, you know, that gets into. So what you're talking about is a project that could benefit, for instance.
They would like it on their street.
Right. So that really gets into kind of the issue of a class exemption, so to speak. Like, for instance, let's say that the city council is taking a vote on raising fees or taxes, you know, for a particular, issue. That could impact them.
Well, that's getting into money.
No, but I'm saying is, but they're not, they don't have to declare a conflict because they are one of many people that could be affected. So if the path potentially affected your property value and made your house worth more, I'm saying that could be something other than money. That would be something that could be to a financial benefit.
I don't think that can be proven one way or the other.
I'm saying, but that's the kind of issue that's, well, sometimes those issues come up.
Well, people like to have parking in front of their houses, so.
No, what I'm saying is sometimes those are the kind of things that have to be considered when you're talking about a financial benefit. Are you the only one that could benefit, whether it's monetary or otherwise, financially, or are you a member of a large group of people that would benefit the same way as you are, like if it was a bike path that was running across a half-mile section of the road? That would be more of a group of people in a particular class, those living on that street, that would be affected in a similar way. That is an exemption under the public, under the government ethics law. If a project was done solely in front of your house and you weren't getting money for it, but let's say it was done and there was a potential that that could somehow benefit your property or something that was of value to you, well, then you're talking about something that's of a financial benefit, not necessarily a monetary benefit. And there, it's hard to prove, but again, that's kind of trying
financial
to come up with a hypothetical.
Or this?
Well, it's not monetary. You're not getting money directly because you're still living in your house.
Okay. I think I got it.
Well, what don't you get unless, do you have another question about that? Because you, it seems like it was important to you.
Well, I had maybe another example, because I was thinking the same thing, where if I'm a business owner and we want to change the street direction in front of my business and it could affect me positively or negatively because it improves or worsens access. And so I could say, well, I have a perspective, I have a recommendation on how it might affect my business, but I also am one of many businesses on the street.
Yeah.
So you're saying it would be, it's not really personal, it's not directed, it's not just I'm benefiting because I have a unique stake in it. It's affecting a whole swath of people.
It is. I mean, those kind of things affect entire neighborhoods.
So you would call that a potential?
I wouldn't even call it a potential, but if you believed that not only were other businesses going to be affected by that change in direction, but you felt really strongly that your business could potentially have a detriment to it financially. Potentially. Let's say you really felt like, you know, if we're going to change from two-way to one-way and all the cars are going to be bypassing my business and I really feel I'm going to be losing a lot of money. You don't know, but you think, you know, that could be a potential conflict because you're making a recommendation that could have a financial detriment to your business. It's not money exchanging hands right now, but it's a financial issue. Let me finish.
So
I would say is, in that case, declare the potential. Doesn't hurt.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah.
So what I would say is, if you feel that it's not just a general neighborhood issue where you're going to be affected like everyone else, but your business could be impacted, you can't prove it, but you think it might. Even though you're not making a final decision, I would declare the potential. It never hurts to declare a potential conflict of interest because you can continue participating like anyone else. And sometimes when I was a public official making decisions at the council level, and Peggy knows this, I would declare potential conflicts of interest without even knowing whether it actually was one, mm-hmm. because I know that protected me if I had a question in my mind about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I would recommend is if you actually feel very strongly about whether it actually is or not something that would rise to the level of potential conflict of interest, before you take the vote or make a decision, give the Government Ethics Commission a call. Talk to their staff because they do this 24/7. And if you have a hypothetical, they probably already heard about it or they've heard of something similar to it and they probably already advised a public official on it. So that would be my other recommendation is if you want to be safe, declare a potential. If you really want to know, is it a potential, call the Government Ethics Commission and get a more clear guidance on that based on their knowledge and experience dealing with these issues.
That's it.
The end.
If there are no other questions, we apologize for taking up so much
of
your
time.
Those were great questions. I just had in my head this was going to take 30 minutes and you could get on with your business.
Well, Peggy, okay. David, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. And personally, I'm going to be re-listening to your presentation so I can clarify some of this in my own head. Peggy, your presentation, is that something we could get a copy of?
Absolutely.
Just for reference. Yeah.
It's I could email it to everybody, the PowerPoint.
Oh, you can email it to them, absolutely, or I can do it. But if you've got it, which you should have it,
I do have
go
it.
Go ahead. And I don't. I didn't know if it was in your packet. I didn't.
No,
know.
I didn't want to put it. It was a lot of paper, so I didn't put it in the packet.
I'll send you a link to the public officials guide.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And you can send it out to the committee members. And by sending a link, you know, you can just open the link and download it or just have it available on your email. So
yeah, that's great. Thank you very
much. I'll make copies for everybody to put in their little orientation handbook. I have a 2007 version.
Oh, that's really old.
Yeah, I know. So yeah,
Who knows what they did in 2007? They probably let us do anything we wanted.
It kind of is the same.
Life was so nice in 2007. No.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
It was still on a Oregon State website.
An official beyond website. Beyond bizarre,
but it
anyway.
Was a 2007.
I'm just collecting my laptop because I don't want to leave it in here all night. Since there's court in here in the morning.
That's right.
So I will.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Really good questions. Very good questions. I'm glad we had a chance to go into more detail.
Okay, we have 20 minutes plus or minus. So
okay.
Maybe we'll just roll through these and see what we want to spend more time on, and other things we'll have to.
I can go real quick through housekeeping. You have your updated roster. We have two bike ped openings still. It's on your roster.
Wow. Are they both, excuse me for interrupting, are they both alternate members or are they regular members?
Let's see here on the roster. What? Do you have it? Yeah. That and that. So one alt and one regular.
Okay. And whose positions were they off the top of your head?
I'll have to email
you
tomorrow.
Let me know because I want to fix the website and also get another press release out.
It was, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Nick and Jacob.
Nick, really? Right? Possibly, name? Yeah. Nick and?
Jacob.
No, it's not. I'll get it.
Okay. Or Michael is on medical or something.
It was the woman.
Jane.
Okay, so that's a roster bike ped. I'd like to put it on next agenda to vote on a vice chair pro tem in case you're ever sick or something.
Have you heard anything from Michael? What his interest is? Or?
I forgot when he said he'd be back.
I thought he said April-ish when he left.
Okay, I will check in on Michael and see what he's doing. Otherwise, I think we need a vice chair pro tem.
Sure.
To take the pressure off of you.
I was in Puget Sound this morning, and there was a little while there. I didn't know if I'd make it in time.
Okay, good. For example.
That's a devil of a ride.
And just so you know, goals and objectives that I put there, put them in your orientation handbook under number 7. And so it's a real quickie. You can, and you need to write in number 7 in your index, okay?
So just these are the goals that we approved for last year, and we approved them late.
The current ones.
And we're just gonna roll them over this year, and then maybe.
Well, that's the next thing, G1.
Yes, right.
What did you?
Well, I suggest, these are really due in February, aren't they? That recall?
It's kind of unclear when exactly they're due.
Okay, February, March. But we're already overdue. I would suggest that we just use what we have in place now, and then we take a look at it in the fall and start the discussion. Because we were discussing this when I came on, and we discussed it for 3 or 4 months after I'd already been on.
And then we finalized it just a few months ago.
It'd be kind of foolish to change it right now because we'd probably go for several months. So why don't we just put it on our agenda to start to review it in the fall so we can actually be on time in February and have it finalized. That's what I suggest.
One thing, though, we did kind of come up with was that maybe change goal 3B, promote and participate in National Bike to Work Day, make that a longer range goal for next year, because we didn't want to take it completely off, but it just doesn't seem like something we're going to be doing in the next couple of years the next year.
I remember discussing just that we still had a lot of work to do to make things safer before we push a bunch of people onto the streets.
Right.
So yeah, that one I think
okay.
Want to postpone.
Other than that, everybody want to just kind of look it over, make sure this is what we want to have for the next fiscal year, which starts July 1st, 2022.
It's fine with me. So, well, I only say that because I did have some thoughts about it, but I don't want to go for two or three meeting discussion about it at this point. But I'm willing to do that in the fall, so we can actually have it finalized when it's due.
I think it only took 2 or 3 weeks because it was our first one.
Okay, well, whatever it was, discussing it when I came on, and I was part of 3 meetings, and we were still discussing it. So I'm just suggesting we don't change it at this point because we're already late to have it submitted. Does any of you guys hear me, or
so is the
agree or disagree? Or?
Is this fiscal year?
This is the current one. This fiscal year, yes, July 1st, 2021 to the end of May.
Are we being asked to come up with fiscal year 2023 by a certain deadline?
Council. I get this report from Spencer that the City Council wants us to update our goals. Goals and objectives. I got this came out in October, and January they wanted us to start looking at it.
As I recall, it was due in February or March.
Department committee goals 4/6/22 was the date to update and status of the committee goals.
So they expect us to do it in April.
Yeah. So you know that's the schedule. Annual goal setting calendar. They had us. He sent it out in October. All these council goal setting meetings, council approved draft goals. Vision advisory committee provides a report on the draft goals to City Council. Finally, 4/6/22, it said update the status of fiscal year 21-22 department and committee goals on the website. I think that's a mistake.
So that's specifically the City Council schedule.
Yeah, this is their
Their goals are probably a little different than ours.
Yeah, and so the letter went, in preparation for the city's development of goals and objectives for fiscal year beginning July 1, please review your existing goals and objectives developed by your committees or for your department for the 2021-22 fiscal year.
So it seems, maybe we don't need to start in the fall, but it wouldn't hurt to start in January. You know, at least, you know, put an agenda item on that one every year, say, you know, let's take a look, start reviewing these. Maybe don't even spend any time at that meeting, but just put these in front of us again and we can start thinking about it, because since we have such limited time, it does take a while, I think, to do things like this that take some workshopping.
Okay. So we'll revisit in January of 2023.
I have a follow-up thought, though, with these goals. It's great to have goals, but if we don't have any plan for implementing them, they're kind of empty. And there are some specific directives on this. How do we want to approach actually implementing these? Or is that something that we need to discuss next time?
No, I've been wanting to discuss this for a few months, actually. First we got these goals, and the objectives are things that happen or don't happen. And so I think the next step would be to assign people to shepherd it, make sure are we doing it? Do we want to do it? So otherwise it won't happen, or even a couple people to do that. I'm going to start contacting schools about maybe that they want to promote the 2022 National Bike Walk to School Day, which is in October. These are rough, like possibly begin actions toward or promote a signage system that links bike and pedestrian routes to city trails programs and other. That's figuring out how to work with the city council to probably that's a letter to city council. We would like to see this happen. We would like to see this funded. Maybe working with Parks and Rec. So this is really kind of your thing. That's why it took so long to do it, is these are things that we as a group wanted to do or have done, if not personally. Maybe somebody on the group can do it. So that is the next step, honestly, to get these things done. Do you want to do that next time, this time?
We're not going to do that this time, I don't think. Do you think we can go through this and actually have a meaningful discussion? And if we're going to stick to our time, 8 minutes?
I don't think so.
I don't see that happening, but I'm...
So the question is, so do you want to do it next time?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say yes. So, we have objectives. We need to...
What do you think, Tom?
I agree. I just want to volunteer that goal two, the grant opportunities... That spreadsheet is already maintained by another organization. If we can crib from, it's all laid out.
Oh, I've been doing my own too.
Okay,
so good. I'll talk to you about that.
Yeah, I see yours, but yeah, there's a very large one that's public domain.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
State, federal.
Great. Oh, because you know that from your trail building, huh?
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
And I didn't assemble it, but I have
that actually.
Portland. Organization maintains it and shares it.
Great. That actually I have been, that's, you can assign that to me. But yeah, because I have been doing that. All right. So we will do more in-depth assignments next time.
Can we all look at this and pick our favorites?
Please do.
Something that we can stand behind and get committed to. And if we find out that none of us want to stand behind any of these, and we'll have something to talk about.
That's a good way of deciding we don't want to do that. Okay, so the next one, G2.
G2, Parks and Rec Advisory Committee. There was discussion in the past about getting together with them on some level. I talked to Mike Cavanaugh about this. He thought it was a great idea, and he gave me Nancy... I don't remember her last name's phone number.
Steinberg.
I called her this weekend. She hasn't got back to me yet. Mike suggested, and something they had been toying with, is have their chair come to one of our meetings and discuss, this is a starting point, come to one of our meetings and discuss what they're doing, and vice versa as a starting point, and then we can take it from there. So I've already initiated a conversation with Nancy. I've been out of town for a few days, so I'm going to call her back tomorrow and see what she thinks about that. So,
okay. Do you think you'll be attending this month, the next bike Parks and Rec advisory?
I don't know what it is, but if she thinks it would be appropriate, I would do that.
10 in the mornings.
Pardon?
They have them at 10 in the morning.
I don't have to go to work, so that's okay.
Okay, so you'll get back to us.
Do you know what day it is?
No.
Okay.
But I'm good friends with Nancy.
You just go to the county or go to the city website.
I can make sure she'll get back.
I will call her again tomorrow. So.
That'd be great. And we welcome Nancy to next meeting. Just let me know if she's coming.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We'll definitely.
On her the agenda if she can give a little presentation of what she's been working on.
Okay, the next item is G3, conceptual drawings for the TSP updates. Is this something?
You know, I threw these in because I think they're interesting. Okay. And it's mostly TSP update. I wanted to hear from Thomas on you had your final meeting in the last 2 months. And now it's going to be decided on by whom? I don't remember what status it is. Planning Commission.
It goes to the council. It's
council.
They're just finalizing it. Yeah, that 2101 conceptual.
Yes.
They screwed it up, even in this, because they put in bike lanes, which the bike lanes have already been decided to put them on Nye and Benton, so that they don't need to make up an extra 14 feet. They already have it, so
okay.
It's kind of moot. But having a second left turn lane off of 101 southbound onto 20 eastbound was the point of this, to ease some of that back up.
So these are, what status are they? Very preliminary?
Very preliminary, yeah.
Just to kind of give the city council an idea.
Well, because they had some other drawing, you know, they had some conceptual ones with a roundabout and an overpass. And like, come on, give us something that's possibly could be implemented, you know. And the first one was putting a sidewalk into the Thriftway parking lot, and Lyle Mattson lost his mind.
Is he the owner?
Yeah. But again, they for some reason put this cross section with a 5-foot bike lane with a 2-foot buffer on both sides, which is 14 feet, which is exactly the 14 feet they're looking for that second turn lane. So it's a little bit moot anyway.
Okay, so are they going to refine it more, or is this just here there for discussion?
Any one of those projects is going to have a full study, traffic impact,
okay,
multiple versions, and all be voted on. These are all just conceptual. Everything
okay
in that whole transportation plan is just, it gives us a menu of what kinds of projects we want to prioritize and what to pursue for a real plan.
Okay.
In the future. So, yeah.
Because I kind of freaked out when I saw that, too.
Every single meeting is like, we can't do that because that's not, you know, it's not a plan. It's okay, just a concept.
Okay, good. Then the next is Ocean View Drive. I just wanted to include that informational stuff.
So we can read that on our own, then?
Read it on your own.
No discussion mm-hmm necessary?
Not really.
Okay. How about G5, Lighthouse Drive, Highway 101 multi-use path?
That's pretty darn exciting.
Yes, it is.
That Derek has submitted a preliminary proposal for that. We have not gotten back to him. It's called FLAP, I forget what FLAP means, but it's monies to...
Is that this one that you're looking at?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me get my little cheat sheet.
You have to recuse yourself.
I was just like, I think I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Oh.
That's my neighborhood.
Oh, okay, cool.
Your driveway, your house is on the map.
It's called Federal Lands Access Program, FLAP.
Wait, which
map are you
looking at?
Derek, it's a $4.6 million project that includes, among other things, all these great improvements.
Yes.
You know, I looked at it myself and thought, oh, but where's the covered bike parking? So Derek assured me this is just very preliminary. And we may not get the money, but I think he did a very good proposal. And $4.6 million?
No, they don't line up with the map.
Is that right?
Oh, never mind. I have been dyslexic today.
Just today.
2D is 2B.
Wow. So I'll just, so the proposal includes a wide multi-use path that will run around where the old Spruce Railroad was. So Highway 101 is very wide. The right-of-way is very wide there. So it goes all the way from Lighthouse to Ocean View.
It goes all the way to...
Well, then it veers away from 101, I think, the Spruce Railroad land.
No, it was...
No?
No, it just goes right along where that sidewalk goes up alongside Walmart. It continues. They're just doing it at Ocean View because there's a big gap there.
Okay, at the cool. Wayside. Well, anyway, that's historically why we have so much great space to work with, and so it can be separate bike lane. And then a shared use path bike lane from the actual Yohona, I call Yaquina Head. Outstanding natural area land ends at 1A, if you're looking at sheet number one there, page 17. So that's going to be a cool, looks like, protected bike lane. And then multimodal connectivity, such as potential park and ride lot and potential ADA accessible bus shelter. So it's cool stuff. He's applied for it. We haven't heard back yet.
So that one also includes the full lighthouse to lighthouse down to Ocean View on 3B. Uh-huh. It's the whole thing. It is, yeah. All right.
Yeah. So that's just something that's in the works. We can move on to the next. I know it's 7. Maybe we can just.
You want to try to roll through these last few items, or?
Is everybody okay with that? I don't think it'll take long.
I'm good.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Item G6, staff report, progress on various city projects.
So, that.
Thing you want to.
That's the only thing I really need to say. And then the rest is just kind of information that I really want you guys to look through. Because the last 3-4 things are just fun, and including this placemaking toolkit, which we had that idea of sometime of doing some sort of citywide event. But I'm skipping around here. The thing I wanted to, my notes here. That's that. Do you have that list? I guess it's in the...
This one?
Yeah, I guess so. It's just, what page is it in our agenda?
20.
Thank you. Okay. All right, so there's a picture, number one, there's a picture of more, I'm going to number two on this memo, page 20. Bike lanes on Southeast Moore Drive. The city will be resurfacing Southeast Moore Drive from 20 to Bay Boulevard. And a more recent add-on is they're really going to try and put bike lanes in there.
Both sides?
That's the question. Aaron, I just talked to him about it. He says, yeah, that's the goal. If not, then it will be the uphill, because downhill is kind of presumed that a bike can converge with the cars safely. Yeah. And actually, I prefer doing that when I'm going downhill that fast. So that's the idea. They're going to try for 2 and at least 1. Okay, so that's number 2. Bike lanes on Northwest 11th Street. It is in next year's fiscal year. It is in the next fiscal year budget. That's that $60,000 we were talking about. That's number one. So that's cool. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, Derek reminds me, but it is there. So number 3 is sidewalk on west side of Harney Street.
Overdue.
That's, Derek is... Yeah, Derek is working on that, and along with that, you can go to the Safe Routes to School information that is in your agenda packet, which is number 22 and 23. On that page 22, the last paragraph, he mentions the 3 projects that he is going to be seeking money for, and I didn't get to talk to him today, but I think he's going ahead with just that one.
No, well, I can talk about that because I asked Beth to put this in. Mm-hmm. I pulled up the city the staff report. He's asking for $700,000, and what he's asking for is to make buffered bike lanes all the way up Southeast Moore as part of his, in his ask.
Long term.
And then all the way from 20 all the way to 7th Street, and also to put sidewalk from 20 to 3rd, so that would be on the west side of
Harney.
Is part of his Safe Route to School grant, $70,000 ask. And then they're also gonna do some turn lane improvements at 101 and 20, and some PED and ADA access improvements. It's all part of his $700,000 ask. So if you read the staff report, all the details are in there. And that—
Is that one of the things that's linked?
That's all I need to say about it, so we can—
Yeah, that's in the works. Those and then so we talked about the multi-use path. So that's number four, and we don't have time for the other ones. But there's a new parking committee. There's a new city center revitalization committee being formed. The city is doing a housing capacity analysis to address our terrible, terrible, unaffordable housing these days. And as you might know, there's Lincoln County Shelter debate, and that's on the county end. City, I think, has maybe even approved it. It works with the zoning goals of the city. So, but it's being pushed back to county because people, when it was being approved in the city or going through the city council meetings, people learned about it and they realized this is a terrible place. It's in the right where the airplanes land and near the helicopters and all kinds of stuff. So that's a debate. Doesn't really have much to do with bike ped, except for I feel that we should have connectivity to all kinds, all the social services. Then again, people usually drive their pets to the shelter. We don't need to talk about number 9.
The animal shelter?
Yes. So anyway, that's that. Next item.
That was G6, G7, Safe Shorts to School. Beth sent an email, storyboard email, that sent out to us 2 or 3 months ago. Encourage everybody to take a look at that. It was very informative and encouraging to hear about what other municipalities are doing with Safe Routes to School program.
What we can do.
I already mentioned the staff report that I ask you all to take a look at that. It's in your packet. And graphic and summary Newport TSP project to be implemented. That's part of the staff report, I believe. That's what that is, right? The third item on G7.
Yeah.
Derek provided a graphic just for city council to look at.
That's right.
Okay, let's move on to I, funding community building resources. I'm not sure.
I put this in. These are just fun things that I've been excited to be kind of getting emails about, and so I just look into it. And AARP and T-Mobile, of all things, have really good grant programs. And so I encourage you to go on their websites. And then among them was this, they also have information on fun stuff that communities can do. And they provide, you know, inspiration and assistance and money for these kinds of things, for placemaking. Because we have been talking about having a community event as one of our objectives. So that's kind of ending on a high note of all the fun things that the city is in the works and that we can possibly do in the future.
Okay, we've been kind of rushed there, but we have all the information at our fingertips. Take time to read it all. And any committee member comments? Item J? New comments? Anyone? No. Confirm. Okay, no comments taken. So we'll confirm the next meeting is—
I don't have a calendar.
The second Tuesday of May.
10th. 10th, yes.
OK.
Okay, I already know I won't be here for the June meeting.
Okay.
I'll be out, so.
And by the way, speaking of absentee, Martha did send me a nice note, and so.
So we should solidify someone to run the meeting in June.
Okay, June.
Yes, at our next meeting. If anybody wants to volunteer, that would make it even easier for us.
I might be gone also, I don't know, so I'd rather wait till next month unless yeah. someone wants to volunteer now.
Okay.
We may not have a quorum, the two of them gone. But if we do have a quorum, I'll volunteer for
okay.
one meeting.
Okay.
Okay, there you go, that's great.
Great.
Okay, that's it. We can adjourn at 7:10. Gavel.
All right, turn off your microphones.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening.